From the studios of WHQR Public Radio in Wilmington, this is Coastline. I'm your host, Rachel Lewis Hilburn. In the United States, 14.5% of the population is 65 or older. That's according to the most recent census. In North Carolina, the number of elderly people is a fraction of a percentage higher at 14.7%. In New Hanover County, nearly 16% of residents are 65 or over, and that number shoots to almost a third of the population in neighboring Brunswick County. According to the American Psychological Association, the number of Americans over age 85 is increasing faster than any other group. The World Health Organization now puts life expectancy for American men at 76, for women, 81. Most people are using more resources and different kinds of resources to live a satisfying life through their senior years. Joining us in the studio today to talk about the challenges and opportunities facing our elders and those who care for them, Dr. Angela Wadsworth is a senior lecturer in the Sociology and Criminology Department at UNCW. Some of her classes include the Sociology of Aging and Death and Dying. Dr. Wadsworth, welcome to Coastline.
Thank you.
Susan Silver is the executive director of Aging in Place Downtown, a nonprofit that helps seniors find the resources they need to stay in their own homes longer. Susan Silver, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
And we're inviting you to join the conversation. If you have a question, give us a call at 910-343-1138. You can send comments or questions to coastline@whqr.org or tweet us at coastlinehqr. Dr. Wadsworth, we've been talking about finding new ways to care for and value our elderly population for decades now. Is this a new chapter in human history? Has there ever been a culture or a civilization that's faced this challenge and gotten it right?
That's a great question, and I wish I could say I had a wonderful answer for you. I think it's something that is very unique for us now, because we know that if we go back a few generations, people were not living as long. For one thing, health has changed in health care dramatically over the last few decades. Our society has changed now. We've got more women working outside the home, so we don't have this sort of assumed caregiver safety net that was there for many years for some families, not all. So it is a considerable challenge. Yes.
So considering that people are living longer now than they ever have, and that our medical care systems are changing, is there anything that we can take from other cultures? Are there components of other cultures or civilizations that we can look at and say, that was a really good idea, or they knew the value of their elders?
Absolutely. Part of what we do in my aging class, we take especially the last few weeks of the semester and look at social policy and what are other countries doing. And they're struggling with a lot of the same issues we are as far as a growing aging population. But they have better supports in place, things like government support for a family to be able to care for an elder person at home, for independent housing so that elders can continue to age in place as long as possible. Medical systems that are set up to where the care practitioners come to the elder instead of dealing with the headache, unfortunately, that a lot of families have with trying to just do something as basic as get an elder person back and forth to the doctor. So there are some wonderful structural things in place in other countries that I think we could take a lesson from.
And when we just look at our own region, Susan Silver, you're with Aging in Place Downtown. What are some of the common challenges that you see elderly people facing right here in this area?
Well, the thing that we know is the highest priority is transportation for seniors, particularly in my organization, which is focused on downtown Wilmington. For a senior who doesn't drive or has given up driving, there's no access to fresh food, to a pharmacy, to some of the most essential things one needs to continue living in their homes. And so when we've had gatherings of seniors, that issue of transportation is always at the forefront We also know that if people don't have transportation, either to essentials or even to social opportunities, they tend to become isolated in their homes. And isolation can be deadly. It begins a downward spiral. So getting people out of their homes, people who are sustaining themselves at home but haven't got the options that other people have for leaving their homes, can get into trouble quickly. So transportation is certainly an important first step.
Can you talk a little bit about why isolation could be the beginning of a downward spiral, why isolation is so dangerous for older people? And Dr. Wadsworth, I'd also like to hear from you on that point.
Yeah, well, we know that isolation is a precursor oftentimes to dementia. And so the lack of interaction between people is just not good for the human person. And as people age and become more frail physically and are more subject, for instance, to falls or to wandering or to those sorts of things, if they're isolated and aren't being looked out for, don't have connections with people, they're even less likely to get help when they need physical assistance. So it's an important thing to have connections to other people and to socialize and to keep your brain active and so on.
Dr. Wadsworth?
I think those are wonderful points. I know as an adult child of an aging parent, my mother is 84. We live in Brunswick County, and as you noted, high level there of elders. And she has commented to me on more than one occasion that she knows that when the day comes that she can't drive anymore, she will have to give up her home because she lives in a rural environment. And we've talked about it, and we said, well, when the time comes, we will deal with that. But that is going to change her housing options. And as Susan talked about so well, isolation has such a huge impact on physical, mental, emotional health. And one of the good things that we're seeing is that there are some senior communities available now that have housing available on a sliding scale, but there are not a lot of them, for one thing. And it oftentimes makes a very difficult process that much more difficult. So I think that anything that can be done to address issues around problems with transportation and the isolation effect are so important. We know that with elders tend to have higher levels of religiosity, and a big part of that is the social aspect.
Susan Silver, the goal of aging in place, one of its goals is to help people stay in their homes longer. If we're concerned about isolation, why would we want to help seniors stay in their homes longer? Wouldn't moving into, say, an assisted living facility give them more social interaction on a daily basis? Or why is this important, goal?
It's important to enable seniors to have the choice to remain in their homes throughout their lives, regardless of their health or their wealth or their age. And that's only feasible if you're able to surround them with the supports and services and resources they need to do that safely and successfully. I don't think anybody's in favor of just keeping people in their homes without those supports. But for those seniors who choose to stay in what may be lifelong homes, making it possible by connecting them with the resources they need probably is preferable to displacing them to a senior facility. Statistically, we know that with displacement comes disorientation and a downward spiral in terms of both physical and mental acuity. So the idea is to avoid that kind of displacement and leave open the option, at least, of staying in the lifelong home.
You're listening to Coastline. We're talking about the challenges facing seniors, whether living at home or in a facility. And here to answer your questions are two experts on elder care, Dr. Angela Wadsworth, a senior lecturer in UNCW's Sociology and Criminology Department, and Susan Silver, Executive Director of Aging in Place Downtown. If you have a question, give us a call at 910-343-1138 or send us an email at coastline@whqr.org. And Susan Silver, you were mentioning transportation as a key component for helping people stay in their homes. What does Aging in Place offer on that front?
Aging in Place downtown offers a transportation program. After realizing how important transportation was, we as a group began to look into what the options were, existing options for transportation for seniors, and again, for downtown seniors, and for virtually all seniors. The options are very limited in the city. There is public transportation, but you have to be sort of hale and hearty and able to get to a bus stop and wait for the bus and make that very long circuit around the city on its schedule, not your own. So that can be tricky for a lot of seniors. There is paratransit, which is transportation on call, but at its cost of $8 round trip, it can be prohibitively expensive for seniors. And again, it forces you to depend on other schedule. It's not as direct as you might wish. So with that in mind, we developed a transportation program that uses volunteer drivers to bring seniors from their homes to our hub, which is at this moment the Hannah Block Community Arts Center at Orange and 2nd Streets. And there we give seniors a chance to socialize. We offer them a cup of coffee and a little time to socialize, and then they board our van. And so far our destination is Walmart, because Walmart has virtually everything. And we give them a little time to shop and bring them back and take them home. And all of that costs $3 round trip.
You're listening to Coastline on 91.3 FM. We're talking with Susan Silver and Dr. Angela Wadsworth about the day-to-day challenges facing seniors. If you have a question or a comment, give us a call at 910-343-1138 or email us at coastline@whqr.org. This is Coastline. Welcome back to Coastline. I'm your host, Rachel Lewis-Hilburn, and with me in the studio, Dr. Angela Wadsworth, who teaches the sociology of aging at UNCW, and Susan Silver, executive director of Aging in Place Downtown, a local nonprofit that tries to help seniors stay in their homes longer. If you'd like to ask a question or make a comment, give us a call at 910-343-1138. You can also email us today at coastline@whqr.org. Dr. Wadsworth, you've said before that we as a culture don't value our seniors the way we perhaps could or should. What are some ways that we could use the wisdom and the creativity and the talent of our seniors that we're not, ways that we're not using them now?
That's a great question, and in thinking about that, I think about the volunteer work that a lot of seniors are doing already, working with school systems, for example, with children, both with tutoring, working with English as a second language, people who come here who need to learn the English language, working in hospitals and healthcare settings, that kind of thing. And there's such a quiet presence. People often don't realize they're there and how much they actually do. But I think that unfortunately, because it is sort of an invisible thing in a way that people don't realize. I was curious about this. I was looking earlier for my class, and the value of volunteer work by seniors is $450 billion a year in the United States. When you look at all the different types of volunteer activities, whether it's church, civic, what have you, and I've had a lot of seniors tell me over the years that there are things that they would perhaps like to do or that they're interested in doing, but maybe the opportunities just aren't there. I know some cities, for example, have larger centers where you have older people who are retired that are very handy who will donate handyman services, quote unquote, and go to people's homes and do little repair jobs for them, that kind of thing. So I think there's a lot of opportunity out there. I would love to see some of that being opened up for seniors.
Susan Silver, are we talking about different populations here? Is there a way that aging in place downtown could help keep seniors active in the volunteer world, making contributions and feeling like their presence matters?
Well, of course. And we're focused on downtown because it's the most diverse part of Wilmington, both in terms of race and income and so on. So we want to demonstrate that our model can work with a diverse population. And many of our seniors do volunteer. Many of our seniors in our program volunteer. But by the same token, they need other services. So while we're serving them as volunteers, they're serving others as volunteers. I think another aspect of appreciating seniors that you asked about is that seniors who are in their lifelong homes are really the anchors of their neighborhoods. And particularly in an urban environment, they have an eye on what's going on and often act as surrogate parents and surrogate grandparents. And so a city needs to value its seniors who live in communities and make an effort to keep them there because it's good. It creates a sustainable city and neighborhood and environment for everybody who lives there.
You know, when I think of downtown, I don't usually think of seniors being a part of the scene here. And when we think about serving our seniors in this area, downtown just isn't the first place that would have come to mind. But can you sort of describe the population that we're talking about here? You mentioned it's the most diverse population.
Yes.
In terms of race.
Yes. We define downtown as zip code 28401, plus some of the contiguous neighborhoods like Carolina Heights and Carolina Place and Ardmore. And frankly, anybody who tells us they consider themselves a downtowner, we agree with. But in general, we're looking at a population downtown of about 32,000 people, of whom about 6,100 are seniors. And so geographically, that area is all of the north side and the south side, Sunset Park, the historic district, and so on. Racially, that area is divided just about 50-50, black and white, with a very slim proportion that is Hispanic or other groups. And in spite of what many people think, because they're thinking about the historic district, which tends to be above average in income and so on, the average population, the average income of that population is actually very much closer to the poverty line than most people expect. So many, many of those seniors depend solely on Social Security. They have very little in savings, and when they have been able to save for their working lifetimes, those savings are depleted often by the time they end their 60s. So by the time
they're looking at possibly a couple of decades that they need to be able to.
Absolutely. So while our program is not exclusively for low-income seniors by any means, because functioning in one's home is not a function solely of wealth, absolutely not. Yet what we find is that for many seniors that we help, some of the most basic services and resources are not available. So, for example, Medicare does not cover dental care or vision or hearing care, three things that are really important to seniors as they get older.
And so if someone is having hearing issues, for instance, and doesn't
have... Or dental or vision.
Right.
We are able to connect them to resources that provide those services at low or no cost. And that's essentially what we bring to the table, is a knowledge of resources and in some cases ways of paying for those programs and services, so that, you know, if you're a senior, if you're anybody, but if you're a senior and you need a given service, the whole world, the whole universe looks like is just very muddled. Mm-hmm. It's very hard to know what's out there and how to access it. Mm-hmm. If you've waited till there's a crisis, it's even worse because you really don't know where to turn. So what we offer is a comprehensive look at their current lifestyle, their needs, their future needs in 12 different aspects of
and
daily living.
Is this something that a senior would have to pay for?
No. We're a membership organization. So our membership is $6 a year for a household. Okay. And with that comes free access to all of our resources and expertise.
And on that front, I have an email from Carolyn who says, I have elderly neighbors who are getting some assistance through their long-term care insurance, but they need more, and they have multiple health issues. Is there a central clearinghouse for information on this topic? So what, Susan Silver, would you recommend Carolyn do?
Well, it depends on where her neighbors live. If they're downtown, they certainly, or she can certainly contact us either by phone or on our website, both of which I'm happy to give you at some point. If they're not, the next best thing is to refer them to the senior center, which is run by the county and has social workers on staff who can help connect them to some services.
Okay. So the senior center that's part of county government,
yes,
would also be able to help direct people who don't fall within your geographic,
that's right,
service area.
Yes.
Okay. You're listening to Coastline. We're talking about the challenges facing seniors, whether living at home or in a facility. And here to answer your questions are Dr. Angela Wadsworth, senior lecturer in UNCW's Sociology and Criminology Department, and Susan Silver, executive director of Aging in Place Downtown. If you have a question or a comment, give us a call at 910-343-1138 or email us at coastline@whqr.org. Dr. Wadsworth, we've talked a little bit about the fact that this is one of our vulnerable populations, but within this population, there are subsets that are also vulnerable. For instance, minorities are vulnerable to discrimination in terms of getting their medical care. And this, I'm taking this from a recent report by the American Psychological Association. What are some other populations that might face greater challenges than the mainstream elderly population?
Well, in addition, as you mentioned, to racial and ethnic minorities, one group is aging LGBT population. And this, as we know, is a big retirement area. We have people moving here from all over the country, which is wonderful for our climate and for a lot of the different cultural activities and the high level of medical care. But one of the things that we're seeing is that oftentimes LGBT people don't feel safe or comfortable in being completely honest when it comes to, or out front when it comes to, dealing with home health providers, sometimes with physicians and doctor's offices, sometimes in medical settings such as hospitals or clinics, because they're not sure of the reception they're going to get. And one thing, unfortunately, that we're seeing, and this is a national thing, is that as LGBT people age and reach the point where they do need to be in a living environment such as a facility like a nursing center, oftentimes what's happening is people are going back into the closet. They're not comfortable having their friends come visit. They're not comfortable being clear about who their next of kin is because of fear of recrimination.
That seems rather tragic, to think that someone's gone through life living fully out of the closet, and then at the end, in the last chapter, this person feels the need to go back into the closet. What are some of the real forms of discrimination that you see, or that people from the LGBT community see as they age? I mean, are these fears of discrimination real?
In some cases, they're quite valid. Thankfully, not in all. We've done a lot locally. I know Dr. Noel Rowan, who is on the social work faculty at UNCW, has just completed some cultural training work with nurses at New Hanover Regional Medical Center, which is wonderful, and that's a great step. So there's a lot more education. There's a lot more policy changes being made. And this is something that other people often may not think about. For example, New Hanover Regional Medical Center, sexual orientation is included in their non-discriminatory policy toward patients. Novant, that's included in their non-discriminatory policy. Unfortunately, not all hospitals do this, and this is something that LGBT people look at when they walk in the door, when they start signing forms, and if it's pretty clear up front that this is not covered, then that's going to immediately raise perhaps a red flag about, okay, I'm still going to put this person's name down, but I may have to be a little more careful here because I don't know what the reception's going to be.
And so when you're talking about next of kin, for instance, or significant others, mm-hmm. the kinds of discrimination, can you give us an example of what that would look like in a practical scenario?
One of the things that we saw, unfortunately, beginning in the 80s and moving forward with the HIV/AIDS epidemic, where you had this separation of who was family and who was not. So blood family versus family of choice. And in a best case scenario, the two are often part of the same, and that's wonderful. But things that can happen and have happened are that people may find themselves blocked from visitation. And despite the fact that there are laws on the books about this, that doesn't mean they don't still occur. So one of the things that's been suggested is that when doing new hires, healthcare providers, that is part of their orientation process, and that perhaps once a year, employees as part of continuing education, that's a unit that might be provided to people, just to kind of raise awareness a little bit.
Is it possible that some of the discrimination that occurs just comes from lack of experience or lack of awareness on the part of the health provider?
Absolutely. I don't think it's every time it happens, it's certainly not always done with malicious intent. What we generally sometimes jokingly refer to as just general cluelessness. But it's difficult when we're dealing with people who aren't quote-unquote, the same as us. And it's hard sometimes for people to make that adjustment or that shift in their thinking.
You're listening to Coastline. We're talking about some of the challenges of aging in our region. If you have a question or a comment, you can give us a call at 910-343-1138 or send an email to coastline@whqr.org. And we have an email from Veronica who writes, I'm listening in with a group of other healthcare professionals who work at Elder House PACE, another community resource and alternative to skilled nursing home care. In conjunction with dedicated caregivers, we offer wraparound medical, psychosocial, and home care services to older adults that would otherwise qualify or require nursing home placement. Dually funded by Medicare and Medicaid, she wants to return to the question about why we encourage aging in place as opposed to ALF or SNF placement. And Susan Silver, help me with this. That's assisted living facility or SNF. What would that be?
It's a skilled nursing facility.
Okay. An important consideration, she says, is that I haven't heard discussed is the sheer financial burden that is long-term care placement. Except for our very low-income Medicaid-eligible citizens, many can't afford the multiple $1,000-a-month fees associated with long-term facility care. People also are usually unaware that long-term care beyond a short-term rehab stay is not covered under Medicare. How are we addressing this issue?
I think we should get Veronica right here into the studio because she gave the full description of what I would otherwise say, and that is that people are very, as Angie says, clueless oftentimes about what their Medicare is likely to cover. And what we've done as a society is create this model where people work hard for a lifetime and they are responsible and they put aside some money for their old age. And then they reach their old age and they find that money is not sufficient to support them in a nursing home, a quality nursing home perhaps, or certainly not in an assisted living facility, which is not covered by definition by either Medicare or Medicaid. So we force them to impoverish themselves. In other words, they have to spend all of their resources and then inevitably become qualified for Medicaid, which will then pay for them in a nursing home. So that trajectory is detrimental both to the senior and to us as a community, because as a senior, the person is robbed of their independence. They've gone about their lives thinking that they have a nest egg and some supports in the system, and they reach the point where they are very unhappily realizing that those finances aren't going to extend throughout their lifetime. And it's detrimental to society that simply has to pay to house them in a Medicaid-qualified nursing home, which may or may not be an excellent one. And so the financial burden on the entire society is tremendous, which is why the federal government really has begun to realize that aging in place in communities with community-based services is not only a better solution from a medical and an emotional standpoint, but also from a financial standpoint.
And so does that mean there are becoming more resources available to help people
slowly,
do what they need
slowly.
To stay in their homes?
There are a lot of resources right here in the Wilmington area that we refer and inform people about. We don't deliver services. That is, apart from transportation, we are what we call options counseling, because we know that there are resources available. So what we try to do is help people become aware of them, make sense of a number of them, and put them into a comprehensive package and hook people with them so that they can access what they need. So it's not that there's such a lack of services per se. It's a lack of knowledge to access those, identify them, and to make them a comprehensive program.
We're going to go to break in just a minute, but when we come back, I want to make sure that we talk about home modifications for seniors, some of the options that might be out there that would help them stay in their homes. You're listening to Coastline on 91.3 FM. We're talking about the practical and cultural concerns of aging in our region. If you have a question or a comment for our guests, give us a call at 910-343-1138 or email us at coastline@whqr.org. This is Coastline. Welcome back to Coastline. I'm your host, Rachel Lewis-Hilburn, and with me in the studio once again, UNCW's Dr. Angela Wadsworth and Susan Silver of Aging in Place Downtown. If you'd like to ask a question or make a comment about the challenges that you or an elderly loved one are facing, you still have a few minutes to do that. You can either call us at 910-343-1138 or email us at coastline@whqr.org. And before we went to break, Susan Silver, I asked about home modifications that people can make, but which we're going to talk about. But before we get to that, let's talk with Don from Wilmington. Welcome to Coastline. You're on the air.
Hi. I'm a senior. I might have a unique perspective on older people. My parents were rather old when I was born, and they played a very significant part in my life up until the time they died. I think our society has a long ways to go before they understand how to value and deal with seniors, because it's deeply ingrained in our society that young people are the most valuable. And it's not just society that forces that issue upon us. We all feel that way as we age. As we get older, we get closer to death and therefore kind of become identified with death, which nobody wants to experience.
Don,
we all will,
but
the contradiction doesn't prevent people from deciding that, you know, old people aren't worth listening to, old people. And I'm not saying that I did listen to my parents when they got old, but dealing with them did give me a deeper understanding of those kind of contradictions.
Don, do you feel as you get older that your value diminishes, or do you feel that society just thinks that your value diminishes, or both?
Actually, I don't feel like my value to society has ever been that great. Perhaps that's a blessing in understanding some of the things that I've been talking about. But I just think that before we decide that we're not doing a good job on this issue, we got to decide, why do we want to do a good job, or why do we not want to do a good job?
And how do you think, what do you think that we could do, Don, as a culture to show our seniors that we value them more? And we're going to talk about ageism in a second, but you raise a really important point here just about our culture and how society views these different demographics. But what could we actually do you think, that would make older people feel more valuable?
I wish I could answer that. I really do. But I don't know that there is an answer for it, just as there isn't an answer for the contradictions of life. So that, well, just to approach it from that perspective, that would be the value that the seniors would have. And I think in many cultures, just because it's sort of a miracle that older people live as long as they do, they are seen in that light. They have accomplished something miraculous, not just for themselves, but as a lesson, as a benchmark that other people can measure themselves against.
That's a good point. And let's kick this over to Dr. Wadsworth. You have talked before about multi-generational interaction and the importance of that and what that does for all the generations involved. Can you talk a little bit about some of the newer programs that are out there that address this?
Well, as far as ageism, unfortunately, I don't really know of any specific programs that come to mind that address ageism per se. I do think it's certainly an artifact of our culture, as far as our focus is on work and productivity and being out in the community and being engaged. And one of the things that gerontology, which is a study of aging, has done as it has grown in recent years, is to sort of change the definition of what it means to be productive, what it means to be valued, not just to go outside the home and work for a paycheck, which is very important, but also the productivity provided oftentimes by elders as far as interaction with their community, interaction with children and grandchildren, with younger people. I know in my aging class, one of these things that students have to do is interview an older person and sit down, and that's their course paper. They have to build that course paper around that interview, and they pull in things we've talked about all semester. And I have students consistently tell me every year that that was one of the best things they've ever done, because oftentimes they can't interview someone that they are related to, so it forces them to go outside their comfort zone a little bit and maybe interview a coworker or a neighbor. And it just opens up a wealth of understanding for them. And
what kind of stereotypes do you think get shattered in that process? I mean, what does the younger person learn about the older person that...
It's interesting. The very first day of class, we talk about stereotypes. And I say, tell me every stereotype you have ever heard about older people. And they sort of sit there frozen, and I'm well, you know, what about older people and driving? You know, and then the ball gets rolling, and they tell me all the stereotypes. And I write them out on the board, and I say, okay, this is the beginning and the end of the stereotype discussion as far as you're using these terms to talk about older people. You know, it's not quote-unquote politically correct to do that, but as we go through the semester, you're going to learn where some of the stereotypes come from, whether it's physical or mental health, but you're going to also understand how baseless many of these are. And so in interacting with older people, I will have students tell me, for example, I didn't think any older people knew much about technology. And one student was great. He interviewed a neighbor, And the man had just gotten back from his Navy reunion, and the man said, "Oh, would you like to see some photographs?" And the student said, "Oh, sure." And he said, "I thought I would pull out a photograph album." He said he flicks on his plasma television, which is mounted on the wall, pulls out his laptop, downloads his pictures, and takes me through a screen, you know, beautiful slideshow. And he said, "I know my mouth was sort of hanging open." And he said, "I'm a little embarrassed to admit this." He said, "But I thought, boy, that was one stereotype that just went out the window."
Yeah. When older people interact with younger generations, does that leave them more at risk for elder abuse, for fraudsters and con artists and that sort of thing? Dr. Wadsworth?
I'm not quite sure what you're asking.
Well, I'm just thinking about connecting with people that they may not know.
Mm-hmm.
Can you talk a little bit about elder abuse and how that occurs?
Well, unfortunately, there are a number of different types of elder abuse, as we know, ranging from physical and mental and emotional to financial. Most elder abuse takes place in the home, behind closed doors, which is certainly not what we're led to believe oftentimes by the media. But I think it is very important. And as people do get older, certainly the risk for things like fraud and financial abuse is there. I think that's where it's important for family, for close friends, to really be sort of plugged in with that older person as far as just the day-to-day things, not monitoring their checkbook or anything like that, but being accessible, because I've had older people tell me sometimes who've run into a problem, "Well, you know, I probably should have talked to my son before I took the car and had all that money spent on it, but he's so busy and I hated to bother him and I was afraid he was going to think I was just not capable of taking care of these things anymore," and it's sort of a snowball effect. I think younger people across the generations need to try to be a little more accessible and a little less quick to jump to conclusions as to why an older person may be bringing up a subject, instead of shutting them down quickly.
Do younger people do that frequently? Because you have said before, if the younger generation knew how they were impacting the older person that they're talking to, they might try to be more sensitive.
I certainly don't think it's deliberate at all. You know, 9/10 out of the time, people are in a hurry.
So that's what's shutting people down? It's get to the point.
Get to the point. I don't have all day. You know, I'm here to make a purchase, not a friend. You know, let's finish this transaction so I can help the person behind you, that kind of thing. And people may not say that directly, but their body language, their tone of voice, everything is giving that very clear impression of, okay, well, I need to get done with you because I've got to move on to the next one. Whether it's feeding someone in a nursing home, whether it's working in retail, whatever it might be.
And what about family members? Because it's got to be hard for an older person who's been self-sufficient for so many years and has been the caretaker to suddenly have to say, I don't know what to do or I need help.
That is hard, and it's a catch-22 because you want, certainly, I know myself, my mother's 84 years old. She's very independent, and I'm very grateful for that. And I want her to be independent just as long as she possibly can be. But I have to understand that involves a certain amount of risk. She's a good driver, never had any problems, but all it would take would be someone hitting her to cause some significant health issues. So I have to admit this about myself. I have to make myself stop and listen. Okay, what is she really saying here? You know, what is she asking me? And make myself more approachable and more accessible.
Susan Silver, with Aging in Place Downtown, we talked earlier about the fact that people can make some home modifications that would make it easier for them to remain independent longer, stay in their homes. What are some examples of home modifications that can help older people?
Well, stairs are an obvious issue, and so people that want to live in their home and may need a ramp rather than have to walk up steps to even access their home, that might be the first thing that they consider. But in a general way, we think of home modification and safety and home maintenance kind of all together. because lots of seniors living in a home have difficulty either making those modifications or even maintaining their homes. And we know that there are resources available, both public and private, to make home maintenance, for instance, affordable for seniors. We know that there's a whole science called universal design that develops age-friendly home environments. So that may consist of ramping. It may consist of lowering light switches and making doorways more wheelchair accessible, or door handles easier to open, those kinds of things, increasing lighting. So that sort of brings us into the safety realm. And so even things like not having scatter rugs that can promote falls are a very simple way to modify your home to make it a safer environment as you age. So all those things, modification and maintenance and safety, are all kind of wrapped up together, and our program addresses all of them with seniors to make them successful in their homes.
And so you can help seniors find resources to pay for these modifications. Are there just low-cost, simple things that seniors could do that wouldn't require?
Well, certainly the lighting issue is one, where you can increase lighting to make it easier to read your prescription bottle, if nothing else, or not to fall over something because you're able to see better. To eliminate, as I said, rugs or cords or pieces of furniture that are likely to trip you. And simple things like adjusting or changing handles of cabinets or doors, that sort of thing, which is a very low-cost item and can make it much easier to get into your room or to get into a cabinet, that sort of thing. But that there's a very broad spectrum of modifications, and for those who can afford it, you can create a home without thresholds and with wide doorways and with elevators and so on. But that's not for most people, because most people can't afford that extent of modification.
And as the holidays are coming up, and Dr. Wadsworth, this is probably a question for you. For the folks who are living in assisted living facilities or in facilities where they get some kind of care, should family members think about taking them out of those facilities for the holidays, or should they visit them inside the facility and do an abbreviated family thing? Or what's a good way for people to approach the holidays?
That's kind of a tough question, and I think that really is an individual thing. There are some residents for whom it's just not practical to try to physically take them out because of the weather, because of the health. But certainly making the time to visit, to interact, and not just with their loved one, but also pay attention to the staff that are there as far as What are the level of interactions that are going on there as well? My mother-in-law was in a nursing home for 5.5 years before she passed away, and one of the things that struck me the first time I ever walked in there, every hallway in that nursing home had a framed saying on every wall, and it said, "We don't work in a facility. We work in our resident's home." And I thought, what a wonderful way to look at that, because I'd never seen that. And that really was sort of the mindset of the people there, because I would notice when I would be there with my spouse and we'd be visiting my mother-in-law at night, if an older person was sitting out in the hallway and they flagged down someone, they stopped.
Susan Silver, what is the website, the web address for Aging in Place Downtown?
AgingInPlaceDowntown.org.
AgingInPlaceDowntown.org. Thank you both so much for joining us today, Susan Silver and Dr. Angela Wadsworth. Thanks to those of you who called and emailed to join the conversation. Coastline is taking a short holiday hiatus and will return on the first Wednesday in January. We'll have some practical ideas on a new you in the new year. That's January 6th at 12:06 here on HQR News 91.3 FM. Coastline's executive producer is Cleve Callison. Our producer is Isabel Shepherd. Technical director is Ken Campbell. If you missed part of today's show, look for it on our website at whqr.org or subscribe to the podcast from the iTunes store. Happy holidays and best wishes for a lovely new year. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn for Coastline.
Thank you.